Cavalry reporting in for the Divided Kingdom. Valentine's Day in America in the year 2018, in the words of the St. Louis Dispatch editorial. On Wednesday afternoon, the scourge came to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, in suburban Fort Lauderdale. The shooter was Nicholas Cruz, 19, who was captured alive. His weapon was the mass killer's favorite, an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. The number of dead totaled 17. 12 others were wounded. It was the 239th school shooting since the slaughter of 20 first graders and 6 adults at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, just over 5 years ago. Sandy Hook, with its tiny victims, should have been the one to change things. It wasn't. Since then, 138 more people have died in school shootings. Add in incidents at nightclubs, concert venues, homes, workplaces, and other sites, and there have been more than 1,500 other shootings where four or more people died. In the aftermath of this tragedy came what the Dispatch called Trump's kind speech, but said Trump's, quote, whatever we can do, unquote, would not mean confronting. The gun lobby, quote, congressional Republicans quake at the thought, and still they will cite mental problems, even though just a year ago they rolled back an Obama-era regulation that had made it harder for the mentally ill to buy guns. No doubt Nicholas Cruz is the very definition of troubled, an adoptive child who lost both his parents. He left warning signs all over social media. He'd had mental health treatment, but walked away from it. It did not stop him from legally buying an AR-15. Maybe that's where we start, with an agreement on universal background checks, longer waits for purchases, and aggressive reports to law enforcement about troubled individuals. Most Americans, including most gun owners, and even most NRA members, support those ideas. Later, the AP reported the headline, just a few states have red flag gun laws. Sacramento, California, AP. The warnings around Nicholas Cruz seemed to flash like neon signs. Expelled from school, fighting with classmates, a fascination with weapons, and hurting animals, disturbing images and comments posted to social media, previous mental health treatment. In Florida, that wasn't enough for relatives, authorities, or his schools to request a judicial order barring him from possessing guns. Only five states have laws enabling family members, guardians, or police to ask judges to temporarily strip gun rights from people who show warning signs of violence. Supporters of these measures, deemed red flag laws or gun violence restraining orders, say they can save lives by stopping some shootings and suicides. Florida, where Cruz is accused of using a gun to kill 17 people at his former high school, lacks such a law. Not mentioned nearly as much in all the maelstrom of anguished parents, students, and shock to Florida and the nation was the fact that the FBI failed to follow through in a tip about the alleged shooter, Nicholas Cruz. And I do not have all the details on that, but the FBI was informed that this boy, or young man, was dangerous, that he had made threats against the school, and yet, for some reason, nothing was done. Yet, stunningly, soon after the shooting, NPR, Friday, February 16th, began prodding its aging and younger, somnolent listeners toward more gun control. Then there were the fake tears. No, it wasn't Obama this time. Jimmy Kimmel, the last year, shot a BB gun in studio where folks could have lost an eye had he missed the target. His target was a jar of pickles. As he opened fire, Kimmel said, this is the New World Order's message to Alex Jones. For all of you listeners to Christian radio, hearing us on WWCR Thursdays, evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and on LWRN.net at 5 p.m. Mondays, repeating at 11 p.m., you might well be interested in knowing what else Kimmel had to say on air about, quote, you dirty Christians up in Washington stuffing your pockets, unquote. Well, after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting, February 14th, Jimmy Kimmel cried on air, perhaps sincerely sorrowful, as is Alex Jones, or as Alex Jones conjectured, acting superbly to engineer pushing on buttons.
Yes, Lou, this is Elizabeth Caverly reporting in. You and I have talked how merciful God Almighty has been to us, not letting complete tyranny and persecution of Christians come to America now for more than 20 years, when the 1995 Oklahoma City bombings of the Murrah Building occurred. And, of course, at that time, you and I were duped Americans, unaware there was anything called a New World Order or a term like false flag or deep state. And certainly, you already knew the word patsy from your JFK assassination interest and your knowledge of the several Lee Harvey Oswalds. When the inside job of 9/11 came, you and I had just been awakened and knowing about the plans for ultimate takeover of America about 3 or 4 months. As America's sins grow and the cup fills more, God's hand of judgment is closer over the horizon. Since legalization of same-sex marriage, we're having many more shootings. The Aurora Theater shooting, the Dylann Roof Southern Church shooting, and now this. What the MSM mainstream media won't tell you is still leaking out. God, you see, shines the light at times by his own engineering of circumstances and fortuitous movement of people. You see, Lou, two Houston TV channels were in Florida for a big sports event, I believe connected with the NBA. KPRC and KOHU, again, that is KPRC and KOHU, were there. Matt Mizell of KOHU interviewed Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School student Alexa Mednick right after the school shooting crisis. All of Alex Jones's listeners, including yours truly, heard her account in which Alexa told she was walking along, hearing more shots, and she suddenly found herself beside Nikki Cruz. And she told him, and it sounded so real to me as an ex-teacher, it was not something staged, it's just the way kids talk. She said, oh, hi, Nikki, something like that. She says, I thought if anyone was going to be doing something like this, it would be you. And you see, he had made statements before, we believe, about shooting, being a shooter. And yet, as Lou pointed out, the FBI was silent. But not those folks who intimidate yours truly and Lou. They're right here now. We hear them. And we know that this program probably is giving you the truth. We don't hear them during some programs that are a little bland, I guess, that don't really push their buttons. But I think this one is pushing their button as they whirl overhead. Now, getting back to this, what this girl said, that she was walking there and she told Matt Mizell that she heard other shooters. There were shooters doing it. And so when Matt Mizell went to tell KOHU, you know, get ready for the broadcast, they wouldn't air his interview. I wonder why. So Matt, brave patriot, we salute you. He put it out on his own Twitter. Then Alex Jones had a call in from another student who turned out to be an InfoWars listener. African-American student Jalen Martin, a very well-spoken, impressive young man to me as a former reading teacher, and he would be to you too, Luke. Lou, he has a YouTube channel, we also have to tell you, and that's Jalen Martin. And so he had a lot of facts, and to me, Lou, this was reminiscent of security expert Wolfgang Albig's talks on InfoWars and other places after the Sandy Hook shooting. Because this man, he was about 70 years old, I think, Wolfgang Albig, A-L-B-I-G, I believe is his spelling of his name, but he had gone all over the country. He was hired as security expert to many different schools, so he knew his business. And he said there were many anomalies, many strange things that happened there at Sandy Hook. You know, it really made it look more like a drill, or at least something that had the handprints of the government on it, something partially controlled. I think if I remember this correctly, they had the porta potties brought in almost before anything happened. Anyway, there were things that you would really say, huh? This can't be. Now, we're not sure, and even Alex Jones says now he doesn't know whether there were real killings there, whether students were killed, whether some of it was fake. We had heard rumors that some parents got big mortgages paid off. They got homes given to them. In the world, we're going to always have this kind of a bribery and this kind of a cover-up, and the weaklings are going to take the money. You're not one of those, are you? Aren't you a real patriot? If you're listening to this broadcast, we really love all you listeners, and we do need some help. Before I get on to telling you a few more things that Jaylen Martin said, if you would like to help us, any amount of a little bit of cash or some coins, you can mail it to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the post office box is 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, and the zip is 21609, and again, our P.O. box is 28, and the town is Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We are doing this broadcast. We struggle year after year. We have been on the air now since 2003 locally. We went on the air October 17th, or we signed the contract, rather. And it was very interesting because that was exactly the same date that I had the Patriots warning here. After, you know, we began to know things and we were telling people on the phone and all of this, October 17th, 2001, I had a big warning. And, of course, then that led us to writing the books. I wrote them and Lou typed and helped me with some editing. So God has plans, and we always thought that was an interesting coincidence, quote, coincidence, that we signed the contract on the very day that we had had the Patriots warning overhead at our home. So now we want to get back to what Jaylen Martin said. He had a variety of things that he said. And first of all, he told how the Secret Service had come a few weeks back to the school to have a SWAT team drill with the teachers. And he wondered about this. And then in the second period on February 14th, he said they had a drill. And then later he heard the fire alarm sound. And he said, we had already had a fire drill. Why? So, again, this is reminiscent of those drills on 9/11. And we've heard from commentators like Alex Jones that these drills, if during a false flag, help to cover up things. They help to legitimize things. They're sort of a tool used by people who are instituting a false flag. Then Jaylen Martin saw 50 police cars and a helicopter. Later, a second copter, as he and others were shifted away from the school. And they had two exits and doors opened, and students were trying to come out, but they were getting pushed back toward the shooting. I think that one deserves a little bit more scrutiny by those who could scrutinize it. Don't you, Lou?
Oh, very much so. What in the world would they be doing that for? This is highly suspicious.
Then we had the other Houston sportscaster, you see, for the other station. We had first KOHU with Matt Mizell, and now we have KPRC. And that person interviewed another student, a Hispanic student, who saw a teacher shot in the head and the students trying to leave the two exits. And again, KPRC would not air it. You know, we're coming to a separation point between those patriots who will pay a price, who will take a stand, and those people who are pseudo-Americans, I think I would call them. We've always had this kind of riffraff, haven't we? In England, in Scotland, in Ireland.
Yes, that's right. There are some who stand up and fight, others who just meekly give in, offer no resistance to tyranny. It's always been so. Or bribes. In some cases, it's not a matter of just giving in. It's a matter of accepting bribes. All through history, it's been the same. Betrayals.
And I think Hollywood is a prime example of that. Those celebs who want their $1 million, their multi-million dollar paychecks, are certainly not going to be there rooting for Trump. Multiple shooters, an autistic patsy in Nicholas Cruz, who, if he did shoot using an AR-15, may have laid it down and walked away. And you see, that would be when Alexa Mednick saw him and talked to him. But you see, the truth is going to keep coming out, despite how the New World Order has perhaps called all the Parkland, Florida students, getting them all riled up to converge on Florida's capital, demanding strict gun laws. Well, you know, Lou read to you about those red flag laws, that only a few states have them. Can't you see why? Can't you see the potential for abuse in your own families? You've seen betrayals. You've seen little cliques, maybe two brothers or against two sisters. And just think, maybe there's a big inheritance coming there, and they want to get rid of one of those members of the family. So they just trump up a mental illness, and they say, well, come and take their guns and, you know, maybe lock them up. Who knows what? When keeping our individual freedom, we have to think about Switzerland, in which every citizen is armed. We're being pushed toward what I believe one of the Democrats, maybe it was Adam Schiff, I'm not certain, they were talking they really wanted to have gun laws like Australia in 1996. Why, that was gun confiscation, listeners. That's when they came for the real Crocodile Dundee, the man who inspired the movies by Paul Hogan. They came. He was holding out like a brave patriot. He was a brave patriot. So you can see that the lines are being drawn. And despite how the New World Order tries to keep covering it up, no, it's coming out. The truth is coming out. Why can't we have security police in every public high school in America, armed to the teeth? That is the answer, isn't it, Lou?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was talking to a couple of young people today, and that's exactly what they said. They agreed that certain people within the schools should be highly trained and carry guns concealed. And if that were to happen, maybe some of these people would think twice about coming into a school and trying to shoot it up.
But everywhere the agenda is continuing, and what they want to do is rile up the youth. And as you recall, we were talking about the book Overthrow, Barack Obama's Treacherous War on President Trump by Matthew Vadum, V-A-D-U-M, and it comes out of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. And that address, if you would like to find out about this book, is David Horowitz, capital H-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z, Freedom Center, P.O. Box 55089, Sherman Oaks, California, zip 91499, 1964. In case you didn't have a pen, here it is again. And the title of the book, again, is Overthrow, and it costs $3. And if you get 25 or more, it's only $1. Okay, it's David Horowitz, Freedom Center, Post Office Box 55089, Sherman, and then the next word is Oaks, California, 91499-1964. Now, we were talking about an organization that was called OFA, and that was Organizing for Action. And this is like the shadow government of the Democrat Party, I believe. It is these extreme leftists, and there's support in all of this from the Soros organizations. And so this Organizing for Action, OFA, one of the key things that it's doing, we read last time we were on the air, quote, OFA has trained more than 10,000 leftist organizers who in turn are training more than 2 million youths. Did you hear that? I didn't say 2,000. 2 million youths in Saul Alinsky street tactics. This, quote, army of social justice bullies will carry on Obama's campaign to fundamentally transform America after he leaves office. Now, these wonderful students there at the Parkland High School setting, they certainly are not people like these neo-Hitler Youth Jugend groups of incipient thugs. No, but they're being swayed. They're not really there knowing all the facts. They are being used. And so eventually, if this thing is allowed to go on, and we as Americans have to keep shining the light of truth, you ought to get this little booklet and give it to some of your friends. We had a listener who sent it to us, and we're very, very thankful. And again, the booklet is called Overthrow, and you can write to David Horowitz Freedom Center, P.O. Box 55089, Sherman Oaks, California, 91499-1964. And we're going to have to get into this a little bit more, because this OFA, this Organizing for Action, also runs a project called the Community Organizing Institute. Now, do you hear those Saul Alinsky Marxist terms that were so beloved to Barack Hussein Obama? This Community Organizing Institute is abbreviated by COI, okay? Community Organizing Institute, and it partners, it says, quote, with progressive groups. Now, if you thought what I would have thought 20 years ago, oh, progressive, oh, that means good, modern, in a really good sense. We're kind of lifting the poor. We're doing really good things. That's the code for communism. That's what it really is, the Reds. With progressive groups and organizations to educate, engage, and collaborate. Woo! Did you hear that? So these change agents are going to come together for workshops and panel discussions and presentations and trainings and film screenings and social gatherings, and they're going to build this strong foundation for partnerships. And so the translation in this book is at COI, you can learn how to spark riots, get arrested to make a political statement, organize lynch mobs and voter fraud on a massive scale, intimidate and shake down corporations, blackmail lenders, race bait public officials and businesses into submission, smear and terrorize your opponents, shield illegal aliens from law enforcement, lead squatters to invade foreclosed homes, encourage welfare fraud, and use tax dollars to promote cockamamie social engineering schemes. And now we see that a new movie is out. And we see in our local paper the headline from the movie critic says, Black Panther is the movie we need. I think not. He says Black Panther is the first film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to feel like it's taking place in the real world. More than a little ironic, considering it's set mostly in the fictional African kingdom of Wakanda. It's all about the context that forms the motivation of its villain. And he goes on to talk about it. And isn't that interesting that that movie's coming out now? And Time Magazine, and apparently Time Magazine has changed ownership. It's now under the Meredith Corporation, so we'll be watching. There at least was something in it this time, the latest issue, about people who had faith and went to church living longer. So that was a nice little something or other. We can't expect to see all of the globalist agenda disappear from Time Magazine, but we'll compliment them when we think they have something good and true, like we will do with any other publication. And so they have this article by Jamil Smith, and he undoubtedly is African-American, A Hero Rises. And so he says that the character emerged at a time when the civil rights movement rightfully began to increase its demands of an America that had promised so much and delivered so little to its black population. 52 years after the introduction of T'Challa, and T'Challa was strong and educated, and he was royalty, he says, in this Marvel franchise. So anyway, these demands have yet to be fully answered, he says. According to the Federal Reserve, and these are the statistics given by Jamel Smith, the typical African-American family had a median net worth of $17,600 in 2016. In contrast, white households had a median net worth of $171,000. Now, I guess you can't sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, but I still have to wonder at those figures. Lou, does that, how many white Americans do you know who are worth $171,000?
Well, I fear that that may mean a little example of a famous book called How to Lie with Statistics. And by the way, I've taught statistics, so I know a little bit about that. Medians, means, medians, mean is the ordinary average. You can manipulate those to say almost anything you want. And the fact that it says it's 171,000 just means you get a lot of rich people. You also get a lot of poor whites as well. And if you lined them all up, the middle would be somewhere around there. Now, maybe that's true. I will say this. Elizabeth and I certainly don't match that number.
No, because we do radio work. And we don't really know any people who have that much accumulated or are worth that much. We were really amused that one of these big investment companies sent us a big packet, and they said, we think that you've done so well that you have, I believe it was $500,000 saved, and are you ready to invest? And I smiled. But you know our investment is not here, listeners. It is in heaven. And we talked the last time about spiritual issues and about hearing what we believe was the voice of a demon come out of a 5.5-year-old child. And you recall why that demon was angry. I was telling someone about heaven, and the demon said, now she's talking about heaven. So you see, we cannot really put all of our money and our time and our love for things here on earth. We have to really think about, what are we building? And I really do believe that in the next life in heaven, we'll be doing something. We'll be working at something. We will have a purpose. A lot of us wouldn't be happy, us A personalities, a type A. We would have to be busy doing something. I remember my late father, he loved his farm, and he would overwork there. He just loved the outdoors. And I believe there's something in heaven where he gets to enjoy that outdoors. There's something really wonderful. You know, the Bible tells us that a mansion is prepared for us. But getting back to this use of manipulating the youth, this writer, now I'm sure he's sincere, Jamel Smith, and I'm not going to say the black people haven't suffered. I went in to teach for my first experience there back some decades ago in a black neighborhood, and I saw for myself there was no chocolate milk there for those little black children. It was mostly black, and the white kids were being bussed in. There were no good textbooks. They were falling apart. They were about 30 or 40 years old. I saw the inequities, and I highly disapprove of them, but at the same time, by triggering some kind of social unrest, it's never going to help the black people. And that is the evil agenda behind the New World Order. And so Jamel Smith thinks this, but we would disagree. The Black Panther Party, the revolutionary organization founded in Oakland, California, a few months after T'Challa's debut, and remember, that debut was in the Marvel Comics, was depicted in the media as a threatening and radical group with goals that differ dramatically from the more pacifist vision of civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Lewis. Now, we have to interject there. Martin Luther King Jr. represented the Christian viewpoint. So you see, the Black Panther was force, violence and force, I would think, in a even though they said they were pacifist. Marvel even briefly changed the character's name to Black Leopard because of the inevitable association with the Panthers, but soon reverted. For some viewers, Black Panther may have undeservedly sinister connotations, but the 2018 film reclaims the symbol to be celebrated by all as an avatar for change. He didn't say an avatar for peace, goodwill, prosperity for all, blacks and whites. Did he? He said, change. We have this impetus towards civil war, and somebody or something, all those Soros foundations, all of these New World Order deep state connections at the top, they don't want to see us living in harmony with our neighbors. And, you know, here in this Time magazine, they do show a picture of Stokely Carmichael, the Black Power, and I think he was the chairman of it. Let me look and see. I think they talked about him later. Let me see what I can just bring to you there about it. Yes, it's, he says there, the activist Stokely Carmichael was searching for something more than mere liberty. To him, integration in a white-dominated America meant assimilation by default. About 1 year after the assassination of Malcolm X and the Watts riots in Los Angeles, Carmichael took over the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee from John Lewis. Carmichael decided to move the organization away from a philosophy of pacifism and escalate the group's militancy to emphasize armed self-defense, black business ownership, and community control. And a quote from him in the summer of 1966 was, we've been saying freedom for 6 years, and we ain't got nothing. What we're going to start saying now is black power. And now the telling thing to me is the picture that is in Time magazine for February 19th, 2018, of Stokely standing behind a podium, but it says SDS, black power. Now, what was SDS, Lou?
SDS was Students for a Democratic Society, and they were into all kinds of instigating uproar. I think they were basically communist. And those of us that can remember back that far know that they were into all sorts of radicalism, culminating in Vietnam War protests, but much, much more than that, all kinds of radical endeavors. So they were not peace-loving, quiet students. They were agitators, I guess is the most proper word for it.
And again, moving back to the book Overthrow, we can remind you again that you see these connections with the Weathermen. And if some of you would like to go to our archives for thedividedkingdom.org, look for the program that we aired December 7th, and which we had a very fine article by Tom DeWeese talking about who the Weathermen were and what they're doing today. And you see, why is Barack Obama harboring Valerie Jarrett down there at his new big gated compound that's near the White House? I mean, isn't that enough to stun you? He's not gone. He might be forgotten by some of us, but he's not really gone. So back into this book about OFA, the Organizing for Action group, and remember, they run this project called Community Organizing Institute, and we had that term a lot, that Saul Alinsky term, with Obama. He was a community organizer, and there are many who believe that his father was Frank Marshall Davis, who was an avowed Marxist communist. So why wouldn't he be following that philosophy by pretending to be a patriotic American president? So protests and disruptions, there were lots of these organized. OFA promoted and participated in the Pussy Power Women's March in Washington and in related marches across the country the day after President Trump was sworn in. The group also promoted and participated in the People's Climate March on April 29, 2017, and in related events nationwide. And organizing for Action developed a training manual for protesting President Trump and disrupting Republican events. Activists used tactics explained in the manual in early 2017 to wreak havoc at Republican lawmakers' town hall meetings and with constituents. Working with MoveOn.org and a new group called Indivisible. OFA has developed tools to help protesters locate town hall meetings to disrupt. Talking points and scripts for question and answer sessions are provided. And I hope you notice here that, again, it's the Orwellian world where you call evil good and good evil. This group called Indivisible, if you heard that, Lou, wouldn't you think you were going to something really wonderful? Where do we hear that quote, Indivisible?
Oh, yes, the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, that must be patriotic just to hear that word indivisible. It conjures up, images of the United States as an indivisible group of states, one nation indivisible. But apparently it's not what it seems.
The OFA manual advises activists on how to intimidate GOP office holders into withdrawing support for Obamacare repeal, cutting immigration from terrorist-prone Muslim nations, and constructing a wall on the nation's southern border with Mexico. Activists are encouraged to take video footage of the spectacles they create at the public meetings and then turn over the footage to reporters. Unfavorable exchanges caught on video can be devastating for GOP politicians when they are, quote, shared through social media and picked up by local and national media. For example, images of disruptors mucking up U.S. Rep. Jason Chaffetz's Republican of Utah constituent meeting in early 2017 gave CNN and MSNBC an opportunity to broadcast the dramatic footage over and over again, forcing the congressman to spend a great deal of time defending and explaining himself. Let's find out a little bit more what this manual does.
The manual also urges activists to swamp Trump-friendly lawmakers, Capitol Hill offices, with angry telephone calls and emails demanding the top White House strategist, Steve Bannon, resign his post. A ready-made script asks callers to complain. This is it, quote, I'm honestly scared that a known racist and anti-Semite will be working just feet from the Oval Office. It is everyone's business if a man who promoted white supremacy is serving as an advisor to the president, unquote. Of course, no proof is offered for the spurious allegations against Bannon, which have become an article of faith among the left. When Republican lawmakers responded to the left's disruption of town hall meetings by canceling them, OFA developed a, quote, recess toolkit, unquote, in time for the congressional recess that began in May 2017. It explains how to vex lawmakers in their offices. As part of this effort, OFA activists confronted Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Illinois, in May 2017, outside his district office, and laughed as Davis began telling a story about his wife's battle with colon cancer. He stopped when he heard groans from the crowd. Did I just hear an ugh? Davis said. Wow, did I just hear an ugh as I'm about to talk about somebody who had cancer? That's offensive. OFA broadcast the event on Facebook live. In February 2017, anti-Trump demonstrators stormed a home district office of U.S. Representative Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of California, knocking a 71-year-old female staffer unconscious. When the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Republican overhaul of Obamacare, on May 4th, 2017, Organizing for Action's Facebook page condemned the legislation and urged supporters to get involved in fighting it. OFA supporters are gearing up to call out rubber-stamp representatives who continue to support this administration's disastrous agenda, because we deserve better than this. Add your name now, we'll follow up with what you can do. Given the extent of OFA vitriol, it is reasonable to wonder if the group or any of its personnel were involved in violent infiltrations of Trump campaign events in 2016 by Hillary Clinton's campaign. Clinton personally authorized the illegal dirty tricks operations against Trump's campaign, according to top Democrats appearing in undercover video shot by James O'Keefe's group, Project Veritas Action Fund. The idea was to concoct evidence that Trump supporters were crazy, knuckle-dragging thugs in order to discredit the billionaire businessman's campaign for president.
And I have to interject there when James O'Keefe's name comes up. He has a new book out called American Pravda, and we have to examine that more, but I think you'll really want to know a lot that's in there, how our MSM is really controlled and manipulated. And again, that is James O'Keefe, and it's American Pravda, and I know it is available at Barnes & Noble.
Many left-wingers had already begun to call Trump a fascist or a Nazi, so creating the appearance at Trump rallies that the candidate's supporters are violent put some meat on the bone, so to speak. In the video, Americans United for Change National Field Director Scott Thall is shown on camera saying, quote, "One of the things we do is we stage very authentic grassroots protests right in their faces at their own events, like we infiltrate. It doesn't matter what the friggin' legal and ethics people say. We need to win this MF. We're starting anarchy here," Thall adds. The Clinton campaign is fully in it. Veteran left-wing strategist Robert Creamer confirms on hidden camera, quote, "Hillary knows through the chain of command what's going on," unquote. In another clip, Creamer is shown saying in a telephone call, quote, "I spend most of my time overseeing the Trump events around the country. I mean, that's what I do for the Clinton campaign. So that's interesting as well," unquote. Creamer reportedly visited the Obama White House 342 times, including 47 meetings with Obama personally. One of the visits took place in Obama's personal living quarters. Scott Fowell also let the Project Veritas investigators in on some valuable tricks of the trade. When asked about how the organization bussed people from one state to another state to vote illegally, Fowell, who also worked as deputy political director at George Soros-funded People for the American Way, explains how to get away with voter fraud. "Instead of bussing people in, it is better to have them travel in their own personal vehicles," he said. And this is in quotes. "Would they charge each individual of voter fraud? Or are they going to go after the facilitator for conspiracy, which they could prove? It's one thing if all these people drive up in their personal cars. If there's a bus involved, that changes the dynamic," unquote. But ultimately, Fowell dropped the deception. He said, quote, "It's a very easy thing for Republicans to say, well, they're bussing people in. Well, you know what? We've been bussing people in with you assholes for 50 years, and we're not going to stop now. We're just going to find a different way to do it." Fowell explained on undercover video how pro-Clinton super PACs communicate with each other and how their information finds its way to the DNC, apparently a violation of federal law. "I guarantee you that the people who run the super PACs all talk to each other, and we and a few other people are the hubs of that communication." And he adds, "The thing that we have to watch is making sure there is a double blind between the actual campaign and the actual DNC and what we're doing. There's a double blind there, so they can plausibly deny that they knew anything about it." OFA Truth Teams. OFA launched a quote-unquote truth team in mid-2013 to fight back against critics of Obamacare and other Obama administration policies.
Yes. In other words, they've been very busy. OFA created Facebook and Twitter accounts, and then Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick kicked off the effort with an email to OFA supporters using the subject heading, "Fight Back, Join OFA's Truth Team." These teams were active in political races. In 2009, the OFA got involved in a special election in New York's 23rd District, where it supported Democrat Scott Murphy over liberal Republican Deed Scotsafava and Conservative Party nominee Doug Hoffman. Later that year, it inserted itself in the Virginia gubernatorial contest, championing Democrat Craig Deeds, who lost to Republican Bob McDonnell. As Organizing for America, and remember that's OFA, it brought muscle to the 2011-12 fight in Wisconsin over that state's out-of-control government labor unions. It also bludgeoned Democrats that Obama deemed insufficiently left-wing, especially red state congressional Democrats who had been wavering on the issue of Obamacare. In 2009, as the Tea Party movement spread across the nation, Organizing for America decided it needed to fight back to save Obamacare. OFA hosted an online forum with Obama that was billed as an opportunity to, quote, update supporters on the fight to pass real health insurance reform. Viewers were advised that OFA volunteers had organized massive grassroots support for health health care reform. The group claimed more than 1.5 million OFA members organized 11,906 local events and made 64,912 local congressional office visits in 1 week. It bragged that its members outnumbered protesters at town hall meetings. That year, Organizing for America created a Fight the Smears website to defend Obama from his past. In 2009, the website devoted considerable resources to trying to distance Obama from ACORN, the acronym for the notorious radical pressure group, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. Fight the Smears published lengthy, untruthful, and unconvincing refutations of Obama's ties to the group. By September 2009, OFA, and remember that's Organizing for Action, seemed to have succeeded in muting interest in ACORN when the Fox News Channel's Glenn Beck program and the Breitbart website, Big Government, revealed undercover sting videos shot by conservative activists James O'Keefe and Hannah Giles, showing ACORN intake workers advising O'Keefe and Giles, who were posing as a pimp and prostitute, on, among other things, how to hide money obtained from illegal activities. The video shocked Americans. Members of Congress demanded an investigation and cut off ACORN's federal grants, and the Census Bureau ended its plans to use ACORN workers. Now that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Remember how we're all marked now, all of our addresses. The government has its big data bank and a big thing out there in Utah. So everything is trying to come together, but that was one thing that was stifled. The Census Bureau ended its plans to use ACORN workers. And Obama's ties to ACORN go back to at least 1992, when he directed Illinois voter registration efforts for ACORN-affiliated Project Vote. The voter registration push helped elect leftist Carol Moseley Braun to the U.S. Senate, where her single term was plagued by serious allegations of corruption. Obama also helped train ACORN leaders and represented ACORN in court as its lawyer. In 2007, Obama said, "I've been fighting alongside ACORN on issues you care about my entire career. Even before I was an elected official, when I ran Project Vote, voter registration drives in Illinois, ACORN was smack dab in the middle of it, and we appreciate your work." Left-wingers are divided on the impact Organizing for Action has had on American politics so far. Some praise it rather effusively. Others view it as a threat to the traditional Democratic Party power structure. And we will skip over that a little bit because we can see what it really is, but we'll give you Nebraska Democratic Party Chairman Jane Klieb sounded like a conservative critic of Obama, describing OFA as a shadow party. "With all due respect to President Obama, OFA was created as a shadow party because Obama operatives had no faith in state parties," Klieb said. "OFA had no faith or confidence in the state parties, so they created a whole separate organization. They took money away and centralized it in D.C. So there are others who feel as she did, too. Even critics on the left have warned of the potential for corruption and abuse. Former U.S. Representative Bob Edgar, Democrat, Pennsylvania, and head of Common Cause, for instance, said the group was dangerous to democracy. With its reported promise of quarterly presidential meetings for donors and bundlers who raise $500,000, Organizing for Action apparently intends to extend and deepen the pay-to-play Washington culture that Barack Obama came to prominence pledging to end. In March 2014, campaign finance group Democracy 21 demanded Obama either shutter OFA or dissociate himself from the group, claiming its fundraising was a direct threat to the integrity of your presidency. Democracy 21 President Fred Wertheimer told Obama in a letter that it appeared OFA has been selling direct access to you and to your White House in return for huge contributions, and referenced a meeting then OFA Executive Director John Carson arranged with a White House official for a New Jersey businessman who wanted help with a legal dispute he was embroiled in with a federal agency over a $2.5 million loan for a school in Pakistan. The Barack Obama Foundation. Let's find out a little bit about it, Lou.
Obama's presidential foundation, which hopes to raise $1 billion, roughly double what was raised for the George W. Bush Library, may eventually end up eclipsing Organizing for Action as a vehicle for destructive anti-social activism in the post-Obama era. Quote, as President Obama has said, the change we seek will take longer than one presidency, the foundation stated on its website. Obama's, quote, historic candidacy was never simply about winning an office. It was about building a movement to tackle challenges that would define a generation. This work will live on in the Obama Foundation, which will inspire citizens across the globe to better their communities, their countries, and their world, unquote. The center will use biographical narrative to achieve political agitation. Quote, through participatory and immersive experiences, the center will tell Barack and Michelle Obama's story while lifting the hood on the mechanics of change and inspiring visitors to spark their own, unquote. In a video message on the website, the Obamas described the center as, quote, more than a library or museum, it will be a living, working center for citizenship.
Sounds like an institute to incite that anarchy they were calling for.
Yes, it does. The foundation's projects will be located, quote, all over the city, country, and world, unquote. Created January 31st, 2014, the Barack Obama Foundation is a 501c3 public charity. It will have no trouble raising the money to become a major player in politics while also overseeing construction of a large, sumptuous home base. In 2014, after the foundation's birth announcement, Star Wars movie franchise creator George Lucas gave a donation of indeterminate size for the library. Media magnate Fred Eichner and hedge fund executive Michael Sachs each gave $1 million. The foundation is operated by Obama friend Marty Nesbitt and former White House political director David Simmes. Conclusion. The election of Donald Trump, someone opposed to everything that leftism has come to stand for since his escape from the ghetto of American politics following the 1960s, and particularly following the apotheosis of that leftism in the person of Barack Obama, has driven many leftists politically mad. As a result, everything President Trump does is met with hysteria. Rather than granting him a quote-unquote honeymoon, the left has been in the streets and on the airwaves since the night of the election, trying to convince Americans to constantly attack and criticize Trump so as not to, quote-unquote, normalize his behavior or grant him the legitimacy it maintains his presidency does not deserve. In the current unprecedented American political scene, anything goes. Left-wing activist Michelangelo Signorelli has generated a lot of supportive buzz with a May 2017 Huffington Post column in which he urges his comrades to get in the face of Trump supporters and ramp the chaos and craziness up to new heights. Of course, he assumes it is self-evident that Trump is a dangerous fascist. He advocates that non-lethal terrorism be used against Trump supporters.
Because Trump is an aspiring Hitler, quote, it's time to move beyond polite protests within specified boundaries. It's time to escalate the expression of our outrage and our anger in a massive way. Starting today and from here on, no elected official, certainly those in the GOP defending and supporting Trump on a variety of issues, for example, should be able to sit down for a nice, quiet lunch or dinner in a Washington, D.C. eatery or even in their own homes. They should be hounded by protesters everywhere, especially in public, in restaurants, in shopping centers, in their districts, and yes, on the public property outside their homes and apartments in Washington and back in their home states. I have to interject here. This sounds something like that memo written by some very rabid gay agenda supporters back in the 60s or 70s, how we're going to rape all your young men. It's interesting. This spirit of hatred, this is a demonic spirit. We're not calling all gay men and gay women demonically possessed. We're just saying this is a demonic spirit that was evident back in that declaration from those gay activist agenda activists. And this is a demonic spirit of hatred, anarchy, probably murder. And so going on with his quote there, yes, on the public property outside their homes and apartments in Washington and back in their home states. White House officials, too, those enabling the authoritarian, need to be challenged everywhere, as do all those at the conservative think tanks who support Trump and those who publicly defend him in their columns and on television. Desperate times, and this is Signorelli writing, desperate times call for desperate measures and for civil disobedience in the tradition of the civil rights movement. Democrats who don't push hard should be targeted, too. Right now, all business in the Senate should be made to stop immediately by Democrats. For example, until we have a special counsel in the Trump-Russia probe, et cetera, et cetera. Are you getting the picture what these people want? And so we can see the influence of the violent protesters. A parade in Portland, Oregon, was canceled after leftist threats of violence. An email from an address registered to RiseUp.net, a group that is open about providing communication and computer resources to allies engaged in struggles against capitalism and other forms of oppression, warned that 200 protesters or more would drag Republican marchers out of the parade. You've seen how much power we have downtown and that the police cannot stop us from shutting down roads, so please consider your decision wisely, the email stated. You see, we're under siege and we're being threatened. These are bullies. This is what this is. These are the Nazi thugs, not anything to do with Trump. And the book says, after urging the use of equal force, Signorelle, and it's spelled capital S-I-G-N-O-R-I-L-E, covers his posterior and claims, I'm, of course, not calling for violence. And Matthew Vadim concludes his book, this is the lie leftists always tell before they unleash violence on their opponents. They swear up and down that their activities will be nonviolent. It's a smokescreen. With the left, there is no such thing as nonviolent protest. The goal is chaos. The left wants to stir up things so violently that it leads to a radical transformation of America, along with preserving Barack Obama's legacy. That is also the goal of his shadow government. But you see, we're coming to you on George Washington's birthday, and God Almighty is in control. And there was quite a miracle there in the winter of 1777 when there was a false spring that tricked the shad fish into running up the Delaware River earlier when those poor soldiers were starving. We'll tell you more about it, but you'll need to tune in next week to the Divided Kingdom. We're going to have some inspirational stories of God's power in desperate times, along with the cutting-edge news. Thank you so much for listening and for praying for us. Let's pray for each other, and let's continue to pray for President Trump and his administration, that he will be guided wisely not to accept any draconian gun laws, but to persevere as he's been doing, putting in those good conservative judges. Good night. God bless you.